I'm going to call this meeting to order. Ask for a roll call, please.
Baker.
Here.
Carlson.
Here.
Parker.
Here.
Russo.
Here.
Swigert.
Here.
All right, thank you. Before every meeting, the chair has to read a statement governing the rules of the meeting, so just bear with me here. The Board of Adjustment is a quasi-judicial body created by the City of Iowa City according to state statutes. The board's purpose is to decide on applications for variances from the zoning ordinance, appeals of decisions of city officials, and applications for special exceptions requested under the zoning ordinance. Board of Adjustment is an independent voluntary board made up of Iowa City residents and is not part of the city administration. We are assisted in our work by the city attorney's office and by planning staff. Prior to this meeting, board members received the material submitted by the applicant, the staff report reviewing the application, and any correspondence submitted by members of the public. Board members have not discussed the application or its merits with each other, staff, the applicant, or any other member of the public in advance of this meeting. All consideration and discussion by the board takes place in open meeting here tonight, where we will also have an opportunity to hear from the public. The board bases its decisions on facts and evidence allowed by city code presented in open meeting. Concise and truthful testimony helps us a great deal in our decision making. We ask that if you wish to speak, that you come to the podium, print your name and address on the sign-in sheet, and speak directly into the microphone so your testimony can be heard on by all present and by our minute taker, as all testimony becomes part of the public record. We ask that the proceedings be orderly and that when you are testifying, you address your remarks to the board. If this hearing becomes lengthy, we may ask that testimony be focused on new facts or on information not already presented. The order of proceedings for each application will be an oral report by staff summarizing the issues of the case and staff's recommendations, an opportunity for the applicant to speak, an opportunity for any other interested parties to speak for or against the application, an opportunity for final statements and arguments by the applicant and staff, and the board will then discuss the issues and evidence, state its findings, and vote on a motion. Motions are always made in the affirmative. First item of the agenda is special exception item EXC24-0002, an application submitted by Casey Court requesting a historic preservation exemption to 1, reduce the minimum on-site parking required for a 3-bedroom single-family home from 2 to 1 space, and 2, waive the standard that parking spaces within the front setback must be located behind another parking space for the property at 435 Rundale Street. Up first is the staff report.
Good evening, Parker Walsh, Associate Planner. And as the chair mentioned, tonight I'll be going over a historic preservation exception to reduce the minimum on-site parking spaces from 2 spaces to 1 for a single-family home, and 2, to waive the standard that parking spaces within the front setback must be located behind another parking space for their property at 435 Rundle Street. Shown here, we have an aerial of the property. Next, we have the zoning map, which does show this property as within a historic district overlay, which grants them the ability to have the historic preservation exception tonight. Starting with a bit of background, as mentioned, this is a 3-bedroom single-family home, and it was constructed in 1937. The house is a key contributing structure in the Longfellow Historic District, and the applicant is seeking to convert the garage to habitable living space in order to assist their ability to live in the home long term. On March 21st of this year, the Historic Preservation Commission approved a certificate of appropriateness to allow the garage conversion and a rear addition, subject to the condition that window and door products are approved by staff, and that will be approved by the Historic Preservation Planner during the building permit review. The COA also acknowledges that the project will need a historic preservation exception from the Board of Adjustment to reduce or waive the parking requirements. The exception requests to reduce the on-site minimum parking requirements from 2 to 1 and waive the standard that parking spaces within the front setback must be located behind another parking space. Here's an existing floor plan with the covered patio here in the rear and the existing garage. Here's the proposed floor plan with the rear addition in the same location as the previous covered patio. This is not part of our review tonight. The Historic Preservation Commission did already review this and approved it through the COA. The next process for this will be through the building permit review. Our focus tonight is for the garage, and they will convert it in order to have a first floor restroom, which the home does not currently have, as well as some additional habitable space. And as noted down here, they'll regrace the wall, replace the garage wall, and replace it, but still maintain the appearance of a garage. So looking at an image of the home here, we can see the garage location, which is original to the home, and this appearance will not be altered. It'll still appear as a single stall garage after the conversion. This is a three-bedroom home, as mentioned, which our code would require two parking spaces for. Currently, they would be required one within the garage and one within the driveway. And we're also here because the owner is requesting to waive that and also waive the front setback standard. And what that means is the code currently requires one space to not be within the front setback or the driveway. And by converting the garage, the only other available parking location will be within the driveway, which is also within the front setback. And we are looking to, the applicant is looking to waive that in order to maintain a parking space within the driveway. Next, I'll go over the general and specific approval criteria, starting with the historic preservation exception. Criteria one is that the modification or waiver will help preserve the historic, aesthetic, or cultural attributes of the property. And the existing historic character will be preserved as the remodel will maintain the appearance of a permanent single-car garage, and which, as mentioned, is original to the house, so it was important to maintain that character. Criteria two is that the applicant must obtain a certificate of appropriateness from the Historic Preservation Commission, and as of March 21st, they have received an approved certificate of appropriateness. Next, I'll go into the general approval criteria, starting with one, the specific proposed exception will not be detrimental to or endanger the public health, safety, comfort, or general welfare, and the use of the and intensity of the property will not change the garage when it converts to living space, nor will it impede the access of any surrounding properties, as all changes will happen on the site within the existing footprint of the property. Criteria two, the specific proposed exception will not be injurious to the use and enjoyment of the property in the immediate vicinity and will not substantially diminish or impair property values in the neighborhood. The findings for this are the proposed alteration will not impact the ability of neighbors to utilize and enjoy their properties, nor will it negatively impact property values within the neighborhood. Criteria three, establishment of the specific proposed exception will not impede the normal and orderly development and the improvement of surrounding properties. The surrounding neighborhood is already fully developed with residential uses, and the proposed garage alteration will not enlarge the building footprint, nor will it substantially impact the development of surrounding properties. Criteria four, adequate utilities, exits, roads, drainage, and necessary facilities have been provided on the property. And the property is currently developed as well as the neighborhood, so there's no changes to the utilities, access roads, drainage, or any other necessary facilities for the neighborhood. And the sidewalks along both sides of Rundle will remain unaltered. And the green space for the property will remain in place, so any stormwater runoff will be absorbed by the existing green space. Criteria five, adequate measures have been or will be taken to provide ingress or egress designed to minimize traffic congestion on the public streets. As previously mentioned, there are no changes proposed to the existing driveway, sidewalk, or the street, and one parking space could continue to be provided on site within the existing unaltered driveway. And traffic on the street is mostly limited to residents, and on-street parking will continue to be available along both sides of Rundle. And just to give you a sense of the size of the street, it currently has an 80-foot right-of-way with 40-foot paving, and this does exceed even an arterial street's minimal requirements. And for two-way traffic, the minimum that we would require is 22 feet. We have 40 feet here, and then in order to park on both sides of the street, you need a minimum of a 20-foot wide drive or street, which in this case we have 40 feet. Criteria six, except for the specific regulations and standards applicable to the exception, does the property comply with all of the code requirements, and outside of the specific waivers we're discussing tonight, the property does meet all other applicable code standards. Next, just looking into how it's consistent with our comprehensive plan, the future land use map of the comprehensive plan designates the area as residential, as does the central planning district, and the use is intended to remain the same. This is just an alteration to the parking standards, so that will remain in compliance with those use requirements. The comprehensive plan's vision also includes a goal to preserve historic resources and established neighborhoods, which is carried out through the strategy and supporting the goals of the Historic Preservation Commission and supporting reinvestment in housing in existing neighborhoods. The plan also notes that in order to protect our community's historical assets, we should continue to support the Iowa City Historic Preservation Plan. Continuing our look into a comprehensive plan, the central district plan includes a goal to work to achieve a healthy balance of rental and owner-occupied housing in the district's older neighborhoods to promote long-term investment, affordable housing opportunities, and the preservation of historic homes and neighborhoods. The goal goes on to state to list strategies such as examining the zoning rules to ensure that they support housing goals and neighborhood stabilization efforts. And the single-family property is located within historic district. And although the board is not revising the zoning code tonight, the board does have the opportunity to examine and modify the standards related to the garage conversion in order to support long-term housing investment in the neighborhood. We have received one piece of correspondence for this application, which was in support. And staff does recommend approval of EXC24-0002, an application to reduce the minimum on-site parking required for a three-bedroom single-family home from two spaces to one, and two, to waive the standard that parking spaces within the front setback must be located behind another parking space. That concludes the presentation, and I now turn it over to the board.
Any questions for staff?
Yeah, I have a question about the parking space in the front yard.
Mm-hmm.
I don't quite understand what the rules and regulations are for that. I thought that parking spaces in the front yard cannot be within 15 feet of the sidewalk.
That's not the case here. I'll pull up the standard here. Here's the specific details of the standard we're looking to waive here tonight. And parking is not permitted in the front principal dwelling setback except in the following situation. For single family uses, one of the required parking spaces may be provided in the principal dwelling setback on a regularly constructed aisle that leads directly to a space that is not located in the front principal dwelling setback. So the setback for this zone is 15 feet, and we currently have one space that would be located within the garage that is outside of that setback. By converting the garage space to living space, the only available spot would be within the driveway, and that would be within that 15-foot front setback, but that's the only requirement. We don't have any other specific standard that says the space must be 15 feet away from a property line.
Okay, but usually it's beyond 15 feet in the front setback.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that into the mic?
In most cases, the parking is beyond 15 feet in the front setback.
In most cases, that's likely. In most cases, actually, cars are probably parked within that setback, but they do have a garage space in front of them that is outside of that space. A standard driveway length is 25 feet, I believe, so a car may still be within that setback area partially if they park in their driveway, but as long as they have a garage in front of them, they'd be meeting the standard that we're requesting to be waived tonight.
Anybody else? Paula?
No.
Mark? Bryce?
No questions.
Okay. I have a couple of questions for staff. Everything we do is permanently attached to this property, right? So in the future, however many years, this parking reduction requirement would apply to all future occupants of the property?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay.
With this approved exception.
What are the rules about rental properties in this zone? If, for example, 10 years from now the house was sold, rented out, still only one parking space required for four bedrooms?
Yes, for this site. And then the maximum right now would only be two spaces, but if we reduce it moving forward, they would only require one space on this site, and that wouldn't change based on if it was no longer owner-occupied.
Okay. So the is there any review when a house is applies for a rental permit that parking becomes a factor, so it just is a moot point regardless? I'm repeating the question in a different form here, but basically I'm saying this is a permanent reduction regardless of future use, future legal use in that zone.
Yes, that's how it's requested tonight. It'd be tied to this specific property moving forward, non-specific to owner-occupied or rental.
Okay. All things being equal, same applicant, same application, same property, same issue, except this was not a historic district involved. It's the same decision and recommendation by the staff. In other words, it being in the historic preservation district is not really relevant to this application.
No, the historic district itself is not the deciding factor on the recommendation.
Okay. If the applicant were to choose to build an addition back, not using the garage per se, but the porch behind the garage, expanding that, and the parking would not be affected, would that require him to come before this board at all?
They would have to go back to the Historic Preservation Commission for approval on anything that alters the exterior appearance of the home.
Okay. But the parking would not be an issue?
Not necessarily. I can let the applicant speak on this hypothetical, but yeah, we're just looking on reducing the situation in front of us tonight.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, I've got one more again. Okay. I drove up and down the street today, probably enough that people thought I was casing it out. Most of the houses on that side of the street, all of them are very similar, if not exactly the same. And in most cases, the garages have been changed into living space, and the cars are parked on the driveway in front. So did they all apply for exceptions to have this happen? I mean, I look at what's already there, and then I look at this, and I go, okay, did they apply for exceptions to have this happen? How did the those situations arise, and how were they dealt with?
I am familiar with one of the other properties you speak of, and they did go through the same process that we're going through tonight. So they did get approval from the Historic Preservation Commission, and then following that, a special exception was approved to waive these parking standards.
Anybody else? If not, I'd like to ask the applicant if he has anything to say to come sign in, please, and introduce yourself.
Good evening. My name is Casey Court. I'm here with my husband, Christopher Munoz, and we have lived at 435 Rundle for 21 years now. And we recently paid off the house, and we're thinking long term about staying in the house. And this is something that will help us stay in the house, because the bathroom now is upstairs and the laundry and pantry is down in the basement. And so that's a lot of very steep stairs. This is a Moffitt house, so if you're familiar with those. In 21 years, we have not pulled a car into the garage. It's too small. This was built for Model A's and stuff like that. If you got it in there, you wouldn't be able to open the doors. So we park in the driveway or on the street. And Rundle is one of the widest streets in Iowa City, because it used to have a trolley that ran down the middle of it. A lot of those trolley tracks ended up in Moffitt houses as Joyce and stuff like that. But there's ample parking on Rundle for for many, many cars. There's the house across from us faces Muscatine, so there's not even house frontage there, so there's several hundred feet that is oftentimes just empty. So I don't see any public good in not approving this exception.
Questions for the applicant? Bryce?
No questions.
Okay. 21 years. Okay. There are two cars using the property now. You say one of them, sometimes you have to park in the street.
Correct.
Okay. The other questions I have nothing to do with this application, so maybe I'll talk to you afterwards. All right. Thank you.
And also the building onto the back of the house, we didn't see as an option because we have a very expensive patio back there and yeah. Stone patio, and we don't want to lose that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Is there an alley?
No.
No.
On that block?
Ralston Creek is behind the house.
Okay. You need a boat then.
So how many square feet does this add to your living situation?
I think it would be probably 160 or 80, somewhere around there. But it gives us a main floor bathroom and laundry on the first floor and a pantry for the kitchen. And that's what we're looking for.
And so how many square feet do you have right now that you live in? These houses are small.
Ours is 1,100, and that doesn't include the basement.
Thank you. Is there anybody that I don't see in the audience who would like to speak for the application or against the application? Any final questions from this? For the staff or applicant? All right. We'll close the public hearing then. Need a motion to move the application along?
I move to approve EXC 24-0002. An application submitted by Casey Court requesting a historic preservation exemption to 1) reduce the minimum on-site parking required for a 3-bedroom single-family home from 2 to 1 space, and 2) waive the standard that parking spaces within the front setback must be located behind another parking space for the property at 435 Rundle Street.
I second.
Any discussion? Is there there's something about historic preservation review? Should that go in the motion, or is that just assumed in the permit phase?
I'm sorry. One more time.
There was in the staff report. There was a mention of the Historic Preservation Commission having a review on the final renovation of the garage.
Mm-hmm.
Should that be noted in the motion to accept, or is that just part of the permit process?
Yeah. The Historic Preservation Commission has already approved the entirety of this project. The next step would be the building permit, which is reviewed by staff and the Historic Preservation Planner.
Okay, great. So don't need to do it. Okay.
And my only comment is I appreciate reinvestment in the existing home, making it more adaptable for your needs, and I could certainly recognize the need for a restroom being more conveniently located.
No, I congratulate the applicant too. I think it's a nice addition. The first place I looked at to live in Iowa City 40 years ago was on Rundale Street. So I don't know if you remember Sylvia Lewis, who used to own a house down from y'all. That's just, I've been here too long. Just ignore it. Any other comments?
You know, when I looked at all the houses today and I looked at the garages, I thought, I bet there's no way anybody today could get their car into that garage area. And so to make you repair the garage, which probably is basically an empty space, seems somewhat absurd. And so by changing it to living space, you're adding and making your living space more livable. And you are not increasing the footprint of the property of the house on the side. I think it's the only reasonable thing to be done to use that space. And I'm really happy to see that that's what has happened on almost all the houses on that side of the street, because since Ralston Creek is behind you, the only access you have is from the front.
Thank you. Somebody want to make a statement about the findings of fact?
Regarding item EXC24-0002, an application submitted by Casey Court requesting a historic preservation. Do I have to read the whole thing?
No.
No, okay. No, I'm sorry.
Yes.
No, I don't want to do that. Okay. I concur with the findings set forth in the staff report of April 10th, 2024, and conclude that the general and specific standards are met. Unless amended or opposed by another board member, I recommend that the board adapt the findings in the staff report for the approval of this application. And I did underline some things, but I felt the findings were adequate and explained the necessity for having it, for having these changes made. I thank the board and I thank the applicants.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Roll call.
Baker.
Yes.
Carlson.
Yes.
Parker.
Yes.
Russo.
Yes.
Swigert.
Yes.
Motion approved. Any person desiring to appeal this decision to a court of record may do so within 30 days after this decision is filed with the city clerk's office. Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Next up on the agenda is the consideration of minutes from the previous meeting.
I have one. They're minor. There's a typo on page 2 of my minute of my minutes in the third paragraph. They have vacant spelled V-C-A-N-T. They missed, they forgot an A.
Where is this?
And then on page 6, I was not sure. Hyman stated he thought it was listed or a contributing building. Is that, you remember, is that the way he said it to a historic district?
Can you reference where you're looking at again on page 6?
Yeah, on page 6, at the very bottom paragraph, it starts out, Baker noted Heinemann raised the issue of the renovations. And then down in the next sentence, Heinemann stated he thought it was listed or a contributing building.
Yeah, it does not need to be listed in order to still be a contributing building to that district.
Okay, so are those two different things? Are those two different things? Okay,
yes.
That's
yep.
All I wanted to check on. Okay.
Well, the question is what he said. Not really what actually is accurate, but we just want to make sure that that the minutes capture what he said.
I can clarify on the recording if it is accurate, but the statement itself is accurate. I would just have to review the recording once again to make sure that's specifically what he said.
Okay. So I move we adopt the minutes.
Second.
All those in favor? say aye.
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 Any other business?
Yeah, I have something.
Yes, ma'am.
So as you know, I was absent for the last meeting, and at that meeting, I was elected vice chair. I wasn't officially notified of the results of the vote. I learned about my election by watching the recording on City Channel 4. So I don't know if maybe you all know how this works, and I'm just the odd man out, and I don't know how it works, but it kind of caught me off guard. And I didn't know what my options were at this point, so I reviewed our board bylaws, and they don't specifically address the election of a member who is absent. And when not spelled out, our bylaws refer us to the most current edition of Robert's Rules. So that's where I went next. Per Robert's Rules, I would have the option to decline the office after I was appropriately notified, as long as I do that within a certain time frame. I had no clue who was supposed to notify me, how I would be notified, or what the timing of the process was. So by the following Monday, later in the day, since I hadn't been notified, I reached out to city staff. I contacted planning staff and Sue because she was the attorney present at that meeting. So, however, once I did receive a reply, I did not decline the office. You know, but I think we can do better. Granted, it's a very small board, but as a practical matter, I think it's best to elect a member who would agree to serve and avoid the problem of electing someone who's absent without any input from them first. Someone who then might decline the office, which I assume would trigger another election. I almost did that. I'd also like to avoid putting anyone else in the position of not knowing what their options were when they're elected by when they're absent and have to figure it all out on their own. So I don't want to overburden the verbiage in our bylaws, but I would like to see this process outlined in more detail. And perhaps Sue could offer some advice and draft something. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are and whether you would support exploring this and possibly amending our bylaws to more clearly define the process of being elected in absentia.
So before anybody else says anything, the question is whether you want this discussion on the agenda for the next meeting, not a discussion of the merits or...
I think that would be appropriate and give the staff and city attorney time to think of possible verbiage. I apologize if there's if I put you in an awkward position. I think I was the one that nominated you. It's just we were looking for vice chair, and I thought you'd be good. And if there's any sort of discomfort at all, that's my fault, and I apologize.
It just came out of, I was having a very difficult time at that particular time. I can explain it later, but not on recording.
Sure. So let's put it on the agenda for next week, next month. Okay, great.
Yeah, we don't have a meeting lined up for May 8th, but if it's okay for the following.
Whenever the next meeting is. It's no urgency to hold a meeting to do it.
So obviously I should have been appointed chair a long time ago because we don't work as much. This is like the third meeting of the year in May that we're not meeting. That's called a joke.
I'm sorry.
So who does convey, if I can ask, who does convey the decisions of the board to?
I'm not sure that it happens. I'm not sure. I suppose every board and commission is a little bit different, whether it's staff or whether the person just finds out somehow. I'm not sure.
Paul's right. As a matter of formality, we probably need to have a much clearer process mm-hmm. for situations like that. Anything else? Motion to adjourn?
I make that motion.
Second.
Roll call? Oh, not roll call, just all those in favor?
Aye.
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 That's it. Thank you very much.